I want to invite you to turn in your Bible to John chapter 12. Sometimes we have the words on the screen. Today, I want to invite you to look on a text. It could be on your phone or on one of the Bibles in the pew in front of you, or you're welcome to look on with someone. We'll be in John chapter 12 here in a few minutes. I would like to know, and this has nothing to do about shaming anyone for voting or not voting, but I would like to know if you voted and you got one of those little stickers and you're on social media and you posted a picture with your I voted sticker, would you raise your hand? I just want to see how many of you, just a few of you, okay? I saw a lot of people that I know on election day who had an I voted sticker. And it's funny, there were even some jokes made about how nice it was to have your social media timeline filled up, not with political ads or with frustrating stories or other things, but just with this reminder of all these people who were engaging in this political act that we have a privilege to do in this nation, and who were showing pride in that. So they posted like, "Hey, I voted," and that was encouraging to me. It showed the dedication to a process that, for those of you who did that, that you believe is important. Not only did you believe that voting was important, but you believed it was so important that you were willing to publicize, "Hey, I did this. I voted." You weren't ashamed. Not completely in a different realm. How many of you have ever dressed up or painted your face or your body for a sporting event? Raise your hand proudly. Okay, a few of you. How many of you did that yesterday? No, I'm just kidding. How many of you, when you are walking, maybe you're going into an LSU football game, or you're hanging out with people, you're not going to actually go to the game, and you see one of these people, I say these people, those three or four of you who raised your hand a moment ago, you see these people who are wearing strange clothing, their bodies are painted, and you see their level of dedication to their team. There's two responses typically to that, aren't there? And maybe you are on one side. Maybe you just think, "Oh, that's just so inspiring how much that person loves their team. I am so encouraged. I am so motivated, and that gets me excited." And you go over and you high-five them, and you say, "Way to go. That's awesome. You're awesome." And you say, "Go Tigers," or whatever, and then you are more excited by their enthusiasm. And then there's people on the other side that your response is, "What a strange person," right? Or maybe, can I say this? You say, what a bunch of idiots," right? Be honest. If that's your internal reaction when you see the people who are painted, raise your hand. Go ahead, confess. "What a bunch of idiots. What a bunch of crazy people. What are they thinking? Do they not have any self-respect? I mean, they painted their bodies, really? Why would they do that?" See, there's two kinds of responses to that kind of devotion. How do you feel when you see that? Some of you see that and you think, "Well, that's fun." Even if you positively respond, then there's two reactions. You could either say, "Well, that's really, really cool. Good for them." Others of you, there's a little bit, though, of an internal regret. You think, "You know, I would like to be more excited about this like they are. I just can't really bring myself to do that." There are two kinds of people in these scenarios: those who are disengaged, who look on from the outside, and those who are engaged, who participate. And I want you to think about what kind of person you are. Now, most of you are probably already thinking, "Well, it depends on the scenario." Some of you If you've got grandchildren and the holidays are coming up and you're like all in with the holidays, you are so excited and all the decorations already up and you already have the menu planned out and you've already made name cards for where everyone's going to sit and you are just like, you are coming alive, going all in for the holidays. You are fully engaged. Now, you might look at the football fans and say, I would never do that. It's because that doesn't matter to you as much as your family does. So it depends. Are you all in? Are you fully engaged? Well, it depends on what we're talking about. Is this thing that you're asking me to participate in worth my devotion? I want you to think about the things in life that matter most. And I want you to ask yourself this question: am I fully engaged or am I on the sideline? I want to be transparent with you for a moment just about me and the kind of person that I am. It takes a lot for me to fully engage in relationship. I love my children, I love my family. And there's some days when I get home and I've been with people all day, talking to people, having conversations that matter. And on the ride home in my car by myself, it's almost like a pregame warm-up. I have to get in the right mindset. I have to prayerfully ask God, God, please help me so that I can fully engage with my family, because they also deserve my full engagement, my full attention. And sometimes when I get home, my body, my mind, my heart want to just withdraw and disengage because I've been with people all day and I have to consciously devote myself to re-engaging. When you think about what matters most in this life, are you on the sideline? Are you withdrawn or are you fully engaged? I want to invite you into a story this morning, a story about Jesus. And I want you to keep this question in mind: am I fully engaged or am I on the sideline? Am I all in or am I holding back? Let's read John chapter 12, starting in verse 1. The context for this, by the way, is that Jesus has just raised Lazarus from the dead, sending shockwaves through the people of Israel. The religious leaders have gathered together and conspired in secret to put Jesus to death, because we can't have someone walking around raising people from the dead, because that would change everything. So within a week of when this story happens that we'll read today, Jesus will be executed by the authorities. Even being in the nearby village of Bethany is a huge risk, so near to the city of Jerusalem. And so we pick up in John chapter 12, verse 1. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served, while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with Jesus. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. But one of Jesus' disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It is worth about a year's wages. He did not say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And as keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to whatever was put into it. Jesus replied, "Leave her alone. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me." Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, for on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. This story, I want you to imagine that you are in the room. First of all, when I am on an airplane or in a closed space, and someone is wearing a fragrance, and they're wearing way too much of it for the size space that we're in, I just have a hard time having a Jesus-like attitude. I just think, I'm so glad that you smell good. I would just like for you to smell less so good near me. So as you hear this story, I want you to think about what it's like to be in the room. What do you see? What do you smell? What do you hear? How does it feel? What are you thinking as you watch, as you listen? It's important to notice and to understand that Mary pretty much breaks every rule imaginable by doing this thing that she does. She has this jar, she breaks it open, and she pours all of this perfume on Jesus' feet. She wipes his feet with her hair. She's just breaking all kinds of rules. First of all, this is at the evening meal. And it says that Lazarus is reclining at the table with Jesus. In that culture, the way an evening meal, especially a meal where someone was being honored, a banquet of some kind, the men would recline at the table and eat, and the women would serve and then eat later. Which brings up the question, why is Mary in the room with the men reclining at the table? The text makes note that Martha is serving, which reminds us of an earlier story involving Martha and Mary, doesn't it? Where Martha is serving and Mary is not where she's supposed to be according to the cultural norms. She is sitting at the feet of Jesus in the posture of a disciple, a spot reserved only for men in that culture. And so Mary, in the Mary and Martha story, she's breaking rules there too. And you see the problem it creates in that story. Martha yells at Mary, yells at Jesus, tell my sister to come in here and help me. And it seems like Mary didn't learn anything from the last encounter. Here she is. And she is in the room with the men, where they are reclining at the table. Here we see Mary again defying her cultural role and taking a place among the disciples. The second rule she breaks is she lets her hair down in public, something no Jewish woman would ever do. It would have been considered immodest and indecent. Only a woman's husband was to see her hair down. I don't want to get too graphic for you, but a modern equivalent in our culture might be for a woman to come into a room full of men who are having a dinner meeting and for her to hike up the leg of her skirt up to her thigh in a room full of men. You see what kind of problem that might create, what kind of intonations that might bring into the room, what kind of things might be said of a woman who would do that. Mary is breaking similar kinds of rules for their culture and what people expected. This is just something that's not to be done. Imagine you're in the room. What are you thinking at this exact moment? Does she have no shame? Another rule that she breaks, she touches Jesus's feet, which was considered degrading, and in certain contexts would have had other implications that Mary might not want to show. The fourth rule she breaks is she wipes Jesus' feet with her hair. Paul says later in the New Testament in a writing talking about head coverings and hair length and all kinds of things that a woman's hair in that culture was her glory and her crown. And Mary takes her glory and her crown, her dignity as a woman, and she wipes it on the floor. She wipes Jesus' feet. She leverages all of her dignity with this action. How inappropriate the onlookers may have imagined. Why does Mary do this? Why does she engage in this act? We'll return to that question in a moment, but first, the responses. We only really know of one response in the room, but we could imagine that there were varying responses. In a room full of disciples, in a room full of men, they may have all been thinking the same thing. We don't know. We only hear Judas's response. And his response is this: what a waste. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? Now, John shows us behind the curtain. He knows, and we know because we've come later in the story. We understand who Judas really is and what he's about to do, that he's going to betray Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, that he is a thief, and that he really was only looking out for his own interests. We know that, but those in the room didn't know. So if you could, for a moment, put yourself in the shoes of the other disciples. What Judas has just said sounds pretty spiritual, doesn't it? He's right. What a waste. A year's wages. Now, I don't know what that equivalent would be for our world today. I mean, I'm thinking at least on the extreme end of our culture, of someone who's working and trying to make ends meet, maybe they're making $10,000 a year. That would be someone who's not making very much money at all, earning only $10,000 a year and trying to live and feed their family on that. Suppose that that's all that this bottle of perfume costs, $10,000. I don't think anyone in the room has spent that much on a bottle of perfume lately. That's a lot of money. Suppose it's more than that. It could be worth $20,000. It could be worth $40,000. A year's wages that this bottle of perfume could have been sold for. This is a lot of money to just pour it out on the floor. The point I want us to notice here is that even though Judas's objection sounds spiritual, it's actually just empty sanctimony. It's false piety. Mary has done this extraordinarily extravagant thing for Jesus, and Judas rebukes her for it. It reminds me of a story that is in 2 Samuel chapter 6. In the Old Testament, when God dwelt with his people Israel in some visible and tangible ways, not yet in a temple, but his presence dwelt among them in this box, this Ark of the Covenant, that reminded the people of God that God had been with them, that he was their God and they were his people, and that they were meant to be a nation of priests to the world around them. And so they had this Ark of the Covenant, this golden box that they would carry around. And before the temple in Jerusalem is built, David decides he's going to bring the Ark. It had been in this tent, and he decided that's no appropriate place for the presence of God in our midst. Let's bring the Ark to Jerusalem. And it says in that story that every six steps they stop and they make a sacrifice to the Lord. And it says that David danced with all his might before the Ark of the Lord. Later in the story, we realize that he apparently does this shirtless, dancing before the ark, before this processional of the ark of God. David is a lead worshiper in this story, and he goes in front of God's people demonstrating what going all in an extravagant act of worship looks like for him. And he dances with all of his might before the Lord, but when he gets home, his wife, Michal, isn't impressed by his show of worship. if you want to look at this later, 2 Samuel chapter 6, verse 20 and 22, when David returned home to bless his household, Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet him and said, "How the king of Israel has distinguished himself today, going around half naked in full view of the slave girls of his servants, as any vulgar fellow would." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who, by the way, chose me rather than your father or anyone else from his house when he appointed me ruler over the Lord's people. It was before the Lord that I will celebrate. I will become even more undignified than this, and I will be humiliated in my own eyes." I love that line when he says, "I will become even more undignified than this in my worship of the Lord." Mary, just like David, goes all in worshiping and giving honor, even to the point of being undignified. Judas and perhaps others in the room look on with disgust, disappointment, or quiet judgment. Can you believe what she's doing? Look at her. How undignified. That's Judas's response. And although we do our best to distance ourselves from Judas in every scenario we can because we know who he secretly is, I want us to stop for a moment and see if we can resonate a little bit with how Judas feels. Can you believe what she's doing? Jesus' response, just three words. Leave her alone. In the other gospel accounts, he adds, "She has done a beautiful thing to me." I just want to ask us a question this morning. Can we stop judging the worship of other people? Could we please stop casting judgment on how another person worships their Lord? Each one of us is unique. God has made each one of us different, and that is a beautiful and good and amazing thing. For some of us, certain experiences or actions or practices draw us deeply into an awareness that God is present and with us and near. Some acts of worship make us feel as if we could just reach out and touch the face of God. But we aren't all the same. For some of us, that looks one way. For others of us, it looks another way. And it can be so tempting to look at how another person engages in worship to God and to think that it's less spiritual or less real or less sincere than what we do. We might look at them and think to ourselves, how shallow. Or if they were more spiritually mature like me, they wouldn't do that. They would worship more like me. And what does Jesus say to me when I think that about a brother or sister? I think this story invites me to imagine that Jesus looks at me in that moment, and maybe not with judgment in his heart, but gently. When I look at another and I'm judging how they're engaging in worship to God, maybe Jesus just whispers in my ear, leave her alone. Leave him alone. What he's doing, what she's doing is a beautiful thing. If what your brother or sister desires to do is to honor Jesus with a sincere heart, leave them alone. Don't look down on them. Instead of doing that, I want to invite you to assume that your brother or sister is sincere in their act of worship and their offering, and I want to invite you to respond similarly to Jesus in saying that what they've done is a beautiful thing. You can acknowledge that. I mean, that's not my style. That's not the way that I feel most connected to God. I don't really even get it. I'm going to tell you, it might even annoy me a little bit. I'm going to admit, I don't understand how anyone would connect in that way, but I know that that person loves Jesus just as I do, and I know that they're sincere in what they're doing. And I can look at that and where their heart is, and I can say, even though I don't understand it, that's a beautiful thing. Jesus explains that Mary was saving this perfume for the day of his burial. In other words, this was always intended to honor Jesus. She just chooses to offer it now. And he comes to her defense because he understands the significance of what she's just done. First of all, what Mary's done is an act of devotion and worship, and an extravagant one at that. She has acted in a way that seems to be undignified, all because she desires to bring honor and glory to Jesus. And Jesus wants those who look down on her to know that he is indeed honored by her action and by her heart. But what Mary has done is even more significant. And here's where it starts to get really, really challenging for me. Why does Mary have this jar of perfume in the first place? Something worth so much. Many believe that this jar of perfume is Mary's dowry, that it was intended to be given along with her to whoever she might one day marry. And in that culture, such an action was expected. And although that isn't how things are done anymore, in that culture, a woman's eligibility, a woman's value, and her dowry were often seen to go hand in hand. The higher the dowry, the more eligible, the more desirable the woman might have been. The lower the dowry, well, you can imagine. For a woman to have no dowry meant that she probably had no future as well. This jar is Mary's future. It is her life. It is her, in many ways, in that culture, it is her identity, the value of this jar of perfume. And she takes it, she takes her life and her future, and she breaks it open and pours it out all over the floor onto the feet of Jesus. And she degrades herself in the eyes of others, and she wipes her future and her life all over the feet of the one that she loves and who she deems is most worthy of her honor and her future and her life. A small drop would have made the point. And she shatters the whole thing all over the floor. And in doing so, she breaks open all that she is and all that she could be, and she becomes a broken and empty jar poured out at the feet of her Lord. When Cortez arrived in North America to explore and to conquer, and although we could talk about all kinds of things about the morality of that and the history of that, there's something in particular that he did, that he ordered his crews to do after they made landfall. They got off their boats. His men were tired and weary from travel for months and months across the seas. They arrived in a new land that they didn't know. They were scared. They were tired. They were hungry. And many of them probably longed to go home. And Cortez ordered his men to burn the ships that had carried them across the ocean. Their only way back home, burn the ships. Because he wanted them to be so devoted, so dedicated moving forward, that they had no other option other than to press on and to do what they came to do. Burn the ships. There's no turning back. What Mary has done in this story is she has burned the ships. She has crossed the point of no return. There are people gathering around because they want to see, did Jesus really raise Lazarus from the dead? Let's see for ourselves. They're peeking in. They're trying to decide what they feel and what they think about Jesus, but not Mary. She has decided. The die has been cast. She has broken open her life, and she has poured it out for Jesus in this act of worship. She's burned the ships, and she's not turning back. How beautiful. It's appropriate because what Jesus will do 6 days later is that he will break open his own heart and life for the sake of the whole world, past, present, and future. Every person who's ever lived, Jesus will break open himself, his body broken on the cross as he's lifted up, and as he pours out his life so that others may live, so that you and I might have life, so that we might receive honor. Although we have degraded ourselves in so many ways, we've rebelled against God in our sin, and we don't deserve honor or glory. Jesus gave the honor that was due to him and to him alone, the honor bestowed upon him by his Father in heaven, and he poured it out, rescuing us by his act on the cross, in his burial, in his resurrection. Jesus goes all in. Mary goes all in. And so the invitation in this story for us today, the question is, are you on the sideline or are you involved? Are you disengaged or are you engaged? Are you silently standing back, watching and observing, or are you in the game? Are you on the floor? Are you breaking yourself open in worship to God? Will you become a broken vessel? Or do you want to be a shiny jar? Lots of us, and look, I get it. The temptation to come in, especially to this space, during this time, during this hour, and to be a shiny jar with my act together, I understand that temptation. I understand that desire. Will we become broken vessels? And will our lives become a living sacrifice in worship to the one who matters most? This morning, we've made some special time together to worship and honor Jesus. And that's what we're going to do for the next few moments. We're going to sing. And I want you to think of all that Jesus has done for you. Consider what your life would be, what this world would be if Jesus had not given himself for you, for us, for the whole world. Where would your life be? What would your future look like? Consider your life without the blessing and favor of God. And now I want you to stop for a moment and consider all that Jesus has indeed done for you. Think of who you are, as broken and fragile as you feel as in seasons of life. Think about where you would be without Jesus. Think of the hope and the promise that you have because of him. Hope for a future, hope of knowing that you are a child of God, that you belong at the table, that you are welcome, that you are loved, that you are cherished. And I want you to consider what response that stirs in you. We're going to sing. I want to invite you to stand. I'm going to lead us in a prayer and invite us, like Mary, to come to the feet of Jesus with your whole heart and your whole life, your future, your hopes, and to break yourself open as we celebrate and honor the one that we've come to celebrate today. Let's pray. God, we are an altar of broken stones. but you delight in the offering. You have the heavens to call your home, but you abide in the song we sing. 10,000 angels surround your throne to bring you praise that will never cease. But hallelujah from here below is still your favorite melody. So we lift up our voices. We lift up our hearts and we sing.